Hello, folks. Welcome to another episode of All About Bikes. I'm Paz Chinchilla, your host today. We have a very special episode with two fantastic guests. I would like to introduce the former owners of the Hot Tomato Pizzeria, Fruta Locals, and MTB icons Jen Zuner and Ann Keller. Hi, Jen. Hi, Ann. How are you?
Hi, Paz. Good morning.
Good morning. Where you guys are today?
We're sitting in our van in Crested Butte, Colorado, looking out at the mountains right now, and it is beautiful, like bluebird sunshine day. And yeah, we have a perfect view right now. It's a great spot to do a podcast.
It does look amazing from the computer. Well, before we jump in into all the fun topics we have today, I want to start by saying thank you for being who you are. Thanks for being the leaders and icons you represent in the mountain bike community. You have helped open the trail for a lot of women in this sport, and I am super blessed to be talking with you guys. So thanks for being here.
Thanks, Paz. Oh,
thanks, Paz.
Yeah, we're honored to be a part of this.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so let's dive in into all the fun topics and questions of today. It's been a few years since you guys sold the Hot Tomato. How is life after running the most popular pizzeria in Colorado? And what are some of your current projects?
Sure. It has been really great to be on the other side, while it was equally great being in it and during it. It's been really rewarding to be able to be in the place where we are now, riding bikes again and just enjoying our friends and our family and each other and our dogs and all of those pieces of the puzzle. It's been pretty magical. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now, current projects, you know, we have been ambassadors for Pivot now for the last, you know, for this year, which has been great, getting reconnected with people in the industry, doing some various events around the country. That's what we're doing. Starting to dabble into a little consulting projects with other business owners and friends. So that's my side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's been, you know, it's been extremely rewarding being able to hand off our very large baby to the perfect person to continue to run it has been, I think, the most rewarding thing as a small independent business owner. Like, we really couldn't have chosen a better person. And so that's been very satisfying for both of us, just to see it go to the right hands. Because that's hard to do, selling an independent business. A lot of times they go to a VC group or a restaurant group, and then you lose a lot of the control and you lose a lot of just, I think, what made it what it was. And so to have it stay independent, to have it go to Aaron, who's just doing a fantastic job with it, has been great in terms of like our transition out of it. But I think also, you know, on the other hand, like, no one really prepares you for major life transitions. And so it's been a learning experience is going to be how I would phrase it. It's been great to have time on our hands again, but yeah, you're kind of left with this, like, what's your identity without it? I think it's been maybe a little bit more challenging than I think either of us initially thought, like, stepping out of it.
100%.
But on the good side, you know, having time, like, I've been able to get back into shooting photos and dabbling in some video work. And so that's been super rewarding for me. And also, just like Jen said, we've been riding our bikes a bunch and spending time with friends and, you know, thinking about trips in April, which is something that we haven't done for 15 years. And being able to be a part of like Rome Fest and being able to do cool events. And so that's been really satisfying.
That is super rad. Do you guys stay connected with anyone at the Hot Tomato? Do you guys?
Yeah,
for sure.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
What's great is that it doesn't feel needed. It feels more wanted from both parties. So Aaron was our manager for about 6 years. And when we started discussing selling, he was the first person that came to us. And we asked, what we had asked for from our leadership team was a 10-year vision on their watch. And one day he called us like a couple months in and had this beautiful vision written for 10 years out, where Ann and I were both in tears at the coffee shop listening to him. And
also like, sweet, someone's going to buy it.
Sucker! So yeah, so it's been really nice. We work with him occasionally whenever he needs something or wants something or has an idea or just something to just discuss. I think we're probably the first people on his call list, and that feels really, really good. And then on the flip side, we get to go in and have a slice and a beer, and the culture's still very much the same. The food's still delicious. It does feel incredibly rewarding.
That is so awesome. So what about lessons you learn from the time running the Hot Tomato that have shaped who you are now?
Wow, so many lessons.
So many lessons. That's like a loaded question.
maybe one or two.
Yeah. I think one of the number one questions that we always received in the business realm was how we created culture. Mm-hmm. And I think that there was this, I don't know, maybe mistaken notion that you, like, there was like this pill that you could take, right? That there was, you know, three easy steps to create culture. And I think one of the things that I personally found most rewarding and also most challenging was that culture is a top-down approach. Like, you can't create a culture that you yourself as an owner don't represent and aren't willing to live. And I think that that's a really humbling approach to take, because it really forced us into this place where, you know, we realized that, like, it was modeled by us. And so whatever we wanted to see in our business, like, had to authentically come from us. And it forces you to examine a lot of, like, your own behavior patterns and how you show up in the world. And to me, I think that that was one of my lasting takeaways, is, like, we wanted to create a good culture. That was something that was really important to us. And so, like, we had to represent that first, and, like, we had to live that. And that takes work, you know, that takes, like, honest examination of your flaws, of your strengths, of the things that you can improve. And so I think that that was my big takeaway, is just being able to reflect a little bit more authentically on, like, how we wanted to show up in the world.
Actually, Jen, you say something on Life of Pi. You quote your mom: "The energy that you have goes into your food." When you said that, and I mean, I've seen Life of Pi a couple of times, but I was like, I'm gonna see it again before I do this interview. And love that quote. It is amazing. I believe you truly, guys. You truly accomplished that. Like, Hot Tomato represent the amazing, genuine vibes you guys have. And so, like, thanks for creating that space and sharing it with the cycling community, because I feel you walk into the Hot Tomato and you get good vibes, good food, and cycling is part of it too. I remember the first time I was going to Fruta, when I started working for Pivot, and someone said, you have to go to Hot Tomato. It's like, every cyclist who's been at your at Hot Tomato will recommend to other cyclists going to the Hot Tomato. So thanks so much for creating that space. It's truly you guys and your vibes and yourselves. So it's pretty awesome.
Thanks. That's really nice to hear.
So, well, let's talk a little bit about Life of Pi, and to our audience, if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. It's awesome, awesome film. What was your initial reaction to the idea of creating Life of Pi, and how was the experience?
Well, the experience was great, but the initial reaction, so Ben and Travis from Felt Soul Media have become friends of ours over the years.
Prior to the film,
they were customers of the Hot Tomato, and we knew them. They lived in Telluride, and we knew them from other various people that would come in the restaurant. So our interactions with them were not big. We're, you know, just kind of acquaintances at the time. And over time that grew, and they called one night, and I think it was either like a Thursday or a Friday night, and we were pretty busy, and they were like, "Hey, we want to do a film about you guys." And we're like, I had taken the call. I was like, okay, because I was really busy. And I'm like, what are you guys thinking about? And they're like, well, Patagonia reached out to us and they want to film about mountain biking. And we told them we had one idea, and it was really about pizza. And it was a very short conversation, maybe 2 minutes. And I think I was getting called back to the line. And I was like, okay, well, just let me know what you need. And I hung up, and I don't think we heard from them again till for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And I guess when Patagonia had reached out to them, they really had to go to bat for us to tell our story. And it took a couple of months, I think, before it all kind of came around. And I think, honestly, we didn't really talk. Anne and I never really talked about it. We didn't really discuss it. We didn't really have any big ambitions.
I don't think we really thought it was going to happen, maybe at that initial phone call.
Yeah. It was real, kind of like just this little dot, right? And we're like, okay, whatever. And then maybe a month or so later, they called back and they said, hey, we got the green light. Can we come shoot with you guys? And we were like, sure. And I think they just showed up maybe a couple days later, and we didn't make any plans. They just came in the restaurant and they started shooting, and we went out and rode bikes with them, and nothing was planned. Everything was kind of, I don't know, on the fly. Mm-hmm. And it was a really cool, fun experience. And it was just the two of us and Ben and Travis. I don't think they had anyone else with them.
Yeah, I think for the first go around.
And it was really cool. And again, I don't think we had any like real big expectations. We just believed that it was, going to be this little thing. We didn't have any idea.
Yeah.
For this film, was this when the Action Sisters were born, or before that?
That's a great question. The Action Sisters were born at Single Speed Worlds in Durango in 2009. Actually, the original Action Sister, Elka Brutzart, is Jerry Action, and she was born at Fruita Fat Tire Festival, I think in 2005.
When we first opened.
That is awesome. Yeah, I just
her sisters,
the Action Sisters are awesome.
Yeah, the Action Sisters, there was no plan for the Action Sisters in the film. And they just, those bitches, they just show
they
up.
They just made an appearance.
That's amazing. did Life of Pi change your lives or your public profile?
I would say public profile. I'm not certain lives.
Yeah.
It was, it kind of snowballed, like getting recognized in public places, which was sort of bizarre. So, I would say that was the biggest change. I mean, we definitely saw an increase in traffic in the restaurant after the film, people mentioning it and coming in because they had seen it. But yeah, I think the biggest change for us personally was just, getting recognized by people.
That piece was really interesting. It was really neat for people to come in the restaurant and say that they came in because they saw the movie. Mm-hmm. I had a couple of personal moments where I was in other places around the country. Like one place in particular, I was at home back east in Jersey, and I went to this really prominent pizzeria in Philly, and I was at the bar by myself. I had a pie. And I asked the woman next to me if she wanted to share something because I just got this big pizza. And I got two. Who am I kidding? I got two because I wanted to taste it. And I asked this woman sitting next to me if she had either one of them or wanted to share. And we started talking. And then she said, do you ride bicycles? I was like, yeah, kind of. That's a weird question. And then she said, do you by any chance own a pizza place? And I was like, yeah, I do. And like, I wasn't really thinking about the movie. I was like, I was actually thinking, is this somebody I maybe went to high school with or like met somewhere? And she goes, you're the lady from The Life of Pi. And she was all excited. And then she like went and like told everyone at the bar and told the staff. And that was really bizarre. I mean, it was a really humbling experience, and also awesome. I couldn't wait to get out of there and call Anne and be like, you're never gonna believe what just happened. So those experiences have happened occasionally where people will recognize us, like not like in the art community or not maybe regionally, but when they happen when you're out and about, it's pretty bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, I remember in Knoxville a few people when we were doing the group ride with you guys, and people being excited because they, recognize you from the film and wanted to go ride with you guys. Yeah. So it's pretty cool to see those things. And I know like it could feel weird for you guys, but it's pretty awesome to see it from the outside perspective.
Yeah.
So that's pretty awesome. So it's been over 20 years since you guys moved to Fuda, or about that, and about 4 years since Life of Pi was released.
Yeah.
What has changed the most, and what do you guys, what do you think helped build your community since all those, you know, since 20 years moving into Fuda and Life of Pi?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think when we moved to town, the trajectory was going in that direction, mm-hmm. but it was pretty slow going. We didn't see, I would honestly say we haven't seen a ton of change in town until maybe like the last 5 years, maybe even shorter than that.
So it's,
you know, with seeing kind of the exponential growth of a lot of recreation-based communities, I think Fruta was surprisingly a little bit slower. But it's definitely, like, it's happening. And I think, you know, we're seeing a lot of good. Like, there's more restaurants and some breweries and some downtown beautification. And it's, you know, there's definitely, like, the community is growing. There's more people moving here for the recreation. There's more kind of like-minded people moving to the community. And so it's been enjoyable to see some of that growth happen. I mean, I think we each have reservations about some of it that is a rabbit hole that we won't go down, but yeah, it's definitely growing.
Yeah. I think also we have a really great leader in our city. Mm-hmm. Our city manager, Mike Bennett, is really awesome. He's an outdoor guy. You know, he has a family with a couple of kids and they ride often. And he's a really big advocate for the positive outdoor changes. Mm-hmm. And he's really nice. I wouldn't say he's easy to work with because he has to follow certain regulations around all the things, but he's nice to work with and you can have an actual honest conversation with him about your challenges and the possibilities. And he can really, I feel like he can really kind of like sit in the middle there and really find some balance to help everybody out that is moving to town to try to create businesses or to create a better space for our community. He's doing a really great job. And then everyone that sits, you know, within his circle of who he works with, they're also like-minded in that mindset. So they're really working on making our community stronger and better for outdoor rec and for people that are moving there. And I think that's been really exciting. But yeah, it started probably, you know, 10-ish years ago, like that, it started to slowly shift, but I think it really shifted when Mike moved to town and really kind of took the bull by the horns and got really, really, really involved. And that's made, I think, all of our lives a lot easier and the quality of life in Fruta a lot better for those of us that do really love being in the outdoor realm of things.
Yeah. I know you guys always been involved in the community in the aspect of the outdoors. Do you guys still are actively, I don't know, going to meetings and trail building or any other projects in the community?
Yeah, we definitely are involved. And to be honest, you know, the 2 years of which we've sold the Hot Tomato, we just kind of took a little break. we just felt like we really needed a little breathing room for us. But we're definitely involved. Like we still have conversations with Mike and the trail organizations and Cop MOBA and the bike shops and all the things, but we've definitely just taken a little bit of a break, but I think we're both ready to jump back in little bit more.
We were pretty involved before we sold the business. And then because we've been traveling so much and kind of getting out the pent up travel angst that we didn't really get to do for 15 years. I know for me personally, like we haven't been in our community as much as I would like. And so it's hard to be involved when you're not actually in town. So I'm ready to be in town a little bit more than we have.
That's really good to hear. I enjoy every time I go to Fruta and seeing how it has grown since I went there for the first time in 2014. So thanks. It's pretty awesome. and because we know representation matters, can you share some of your experience on how breaking stereotypes and fostering acceptance help your journey?
Yeah, that's a great question, Paz. And I know we both love talking about it. I think something that we genuinely wanted to do with the business was create a space that, you know, we moved into a rural farming and ranching community. It is largely conservative. It is in the West. It's rural. It is everything you think about when you think about Western Colorado. And mm-hmm. coming from the experience of Over the Edge, you know, they were, and this is not a critique, but they were very focused on an outside customer base. Sorry, dogs. An outside customer base coming in that did not really live in the community. And we mm-hmm. saw the ebbs and flows of what that meant in terms of traffic into the business and how the slow season was painfully slow and the busy season was off the charts. And we knew we wanted to try to run something that was a little bit more like this and didn't have mm-hmm. these just extreme peaks and valleys. Peaks. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't coming from a place of a marketing tactic. Like, it was coming from a place of, like, we genuinely wanted to create a space that was welcoming for the local Fruita mm-hmm. community. And that really meant that, like, we couldn't just polarize ourselves. And so we, mm-hmm. like, we needed to be part. I mean, you know, we're both of, like, I'm from the West Coast, Jen's is from the East Coast. We moved to a small kind of conservative community. And, like, we were starting to meet people within the community that we genuinely enjoyed and wanted them to come into our business. And so it came from this place of, like, how do we be welcoming to people that might not believe the same thing that we do, or that might, you know, just seem for all intents and purposes to be like 180 from who we are. And what that did, to get back to your question about representation, is that I think that it allowed, like, our approach to being part of the community, engaged in the community, I think also allowed people to see us in the same light. And so we became mm-hmm. like, I never really felt, for the most part, we did have moments of feeling unaccepted, but for the most, I would say 95% of the time, the relationship was pretty symbiotic. Like, yeah. we tried to create a place that was welcoming, and in turn, like, we saw a lot of the local community that might not necessarily be, from the outside perspective, someone that we would think would be friendly towards us, mm-hmm. like, also exchange that relationship. And it was really, like, we were able to foster some relationships with people that were really rewarding, because mm-hmm. they were not us staying in this, like, binary view of, like, who we should be associated with. And it was one of my favorite parts mm-hmm. of the business. And being in a community that was not just all, you know, liberal left wing, like we might be, mm-hmm. but, you know, just kind of like crossing some borders that I think in the end was really great for people's acceptance of us in the community.
Yeah,
it was really rewarding.
I completely agree with that. One of my favorite stories about that is we had a gay couple come to us, two gay women that wanted to have their wedding at the Hot Tomato. And we were like, whoa, okay. We didn't really think much of it until mm-hmm. we kind of had more conversations with them, and they were both from the area, and they had said that if it wasn't for us and the Hot Tomato, their families never would have accepted them. And that was a really mm-hmm. big moment for Anne and I. And it was the first and only wedding we ever had at the Hot Tomato. Mm-hmm. And it was really wonderful. And it was really neat to see, you know, Fruita folks kind of like engaged with us. And it was just this really fun, accepting space for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I remember when those girls said that to me, I like lost it. I was like, you can just have the space. We're not even going to charge you. We'll just pay for food. And it was such a neat yeah. thing. It was like, I felt like we really made a difference in, I think, a lot of people's lives in that community. And mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, before Life of Pi, before all those things, I think it really made a difference. And even like some of the letters that we still get from past staff, you know, mm-hmm. like how much we helped change their views on things that they probably never would have had the option to see otherwise. And that feels really good at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. I see you tearing up over there.
Yes. I get emotional sometimes. And that is an amazing story because, I mean, we all know representation matters. And we say it a lot, but actually seeing it, in firsthand, and, you know, hearing it, it's truly amazing. It does give me a lot of joy because I feel like sometimes we are afraid of putting ourselves out there and being that representation. Yeah. And so what you guys have done is amazing. And you know, listening to those stories is just gives me chills. So
yeah. I remember in that instance being really afraid because I didn't know what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like we were going to close on a busy Saturday to have this wedding. For a gay wedding. I was like, oh my God, is this good or bad? And we had a really great, nice discussion about it with the girls and we're like, we're doing it. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really cool.
That is awesome. And I mean, I also live in a really small community, that is pretty conservative too. So what would be kind of like an advice you can give to entrepreneurs that are in situations like this?
Yeah.
Like you guys started this business and like, I mean, like I said, one of the most popular pizzerias in Colorado, like you guys did an amazing job. So what advice can you give to entrepreneurs that are in a similar situation in this smaller towns in the US?
I think be unapologetic about who you are and what your culture is, but also recognize that that is not a justification to be elitist. You know, it's not it's weird to see things come full circle where it's like you're no longer welcoming. And I don't know, like I think the two can coexist. Like you can be unapologetic about who you are and you can also be welcoming to people that don't look like who you are or believe what you do.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really good answer.
Yes. Nailed it.
Yeah, nailed it.
Well, I think we can finish that topic with that. Really good. Well, let's chat about bikes. Like you said, Jan, earlier, like you guys are now riding Pivots, and we are so stoked to have you on the Pivot family. How did you guys become Pivot ambassadors?
Well, we groveled.
We both had, we were at Over the Edge for 3 years prior to opening the Tomato, and mm-hmm. we first met Chris when he had Titus, because he was building bikes mm-hmm. for Over the Edge. And so pretty shortly on when we started at Over the Edge, we met Chris, and like we went, I think it was the first year we went down to Phoenix and uh-huh. got a tour of the Titus facility and rode bikes with him. And, you know, he had a really good relationship with Troy Rarick, who founded Over the Edge. And so he just was someone that, you know, we'd go down to Phoenix at least once a year and ride down there. He would come up to Fruta for a lot of the events. And so we just kind of established this relationship. Like I had an Edge cycle for a long time.
Oh yeah.
Back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which was basically, I think it was like the Titus Racer X was mm-hmm. kind of the equivalent bike. Yeah. So we had known him for, you know, we started Over the Edge in 2002.
Yeah.
So we'd known him for
a long time,
20 plus years.
Yeah. And then I was shopping for a new bike a few years back. And I was like, I want to ride a Pivot. And I just messaged them. And I was like, hey, I would like to, what do you suggest? And we just started having a conversation. Mm-hmm. And that was probably like 8 years ago now.
Yeah,
probably.
You've been on a Pivot for a long time.
Been on a Pivot for a while. And then that, you know, we go to Sedona every winter. And so every time we're down, we always just shoot them an email and we're like, hey, if you guys want to come up and ride, come. Mm-hmm. And then this year we actually called Chris like right around Christmas time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we're coming down and we're taking you for a ride. Cause he's always too busy. Like we understand. And we're like, no, you need to ride your bike more. We're understanding this now from this side. Like you need to ride more. How about if we come down? I think we went down on New Year's Eve rode with him.
Yeah.
And made him come out with us for a couple of hours. And that kind of,
that's awesome.
Kind of solidified the deal. And we were like, Anne was shopping for a new bike. And
yeah, I do have something to add to that is, you know, we've been involved in Rome for a couple of years, the Rome Women's mm-hmm. Mountain Bike Festival, which you're well aware of. And I have been riding a bike that has not done great with women in the industry. So I'll leave the brand unnamed, but I started to, you know, it started to become, speaking of representation, mm-hmm. like as we mm-hmm. were participating in Rome and just seeing all the magic of the festivals, like I was looking around and seeing the same, you know, four or five brands that were really engaged in the festivals. And so when I started to look for a new bike, I just was like, I need to put my money where my mouth is because this is important to me. And I want to ride a bike brand that actually cares about this and is participatory in these really cool events that are mm-hmm. kind of pushing the ball forward. And so, you know, Pivot, you'd loved your Pivot. I know that DW Link feels amazing. And so it was just, it was kind of a no brainer. Like, of course I should ride a Pivot. So that was kind of, you know, you already, we had an established relationship with Chris. You'd been on a Pivot for a long time. Yeah. And I really felt like it was important to support brands that support the parts of the industry that we really believe in.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
I actually have a super fun memory. And I actually went into my phone to look for it to make sure I got the date right. So it was Rome Fest Sedona 2019. Okay. And then you were riding a Pivot and you stopped at the booth because you wanted it just share something with Chris. So I have a video of you saying how much you love your Mach 6. And I just like that. I remember that, like, just made my day. And I like sent him that text to Chris and he was nice. So stoked. And yeah,
that's awesome.
all the good things back in 2019. Yeah. You guys are also riding e-bikes and kind of like huge advocates of it.
Totally.
Why e-bikes?
Oh, because they're so fun.
Because they make you do this. Because you can come to Crested Butte, Colorado and go ride every day at 10,000 feet plus.
Yeah. Yeah. E-bikes are so fun. and it honestly, you know, I will admit, like when they first came out, we were both, I'm not going to say we were haters, but we weren't on the bandwagon by any means. And it took until riding them. And I think for us, you know, we've always loved the exploratory nature of mountain bikes and e-bikes just, it's not, I think what I like to tell people is it's not an either or, like for us, it's not a replacement of our mm-hmm. regular bikes. It's just, it's in addition to, and it just allows for us, our purpose of riding them is it allows for a different type of exploration because everything is fun on an e-bike, right? And so even a dirt road is fun on an e-bike. And so you start to just look at the map differently and you start to look at like route planning differently. Mm-hmm. You're like, I've always wanted to know where that steep rutted double track goes and I'm just going to go explore. And so the exploration possibilities are so fun on them. That's really like, kind of, I think the thing that for me personally sold me.
Totally. I think too, we were discussing, we had motos for a short period of time, but we never had the opportunity to ride them because we were working all the time. And it's just a bigger commitment, you know, loading up, working on them, trailering them, all the things. And when you have a short period of window of time, so we never rode them. They just sat in our garage. We ended up selling them, but we still had that kind of itch to go explore. And so when e-bikes, totally what Anne just said, when e-bikes started kind of coming out, we're like, huh, what if we did this? Mm-hmm. And so now we've been riding e-bikes since 2018,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And the places we've gone, I mean, we live in Colorado and have lived in Colorado for 20 years. And the places we have been able to pedal to that we never even knew existed, even in our backyard in Fruita in the Grand Valley, places we're going to, we're like, I never knew we could even get here.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems so far off the map to where now with an e-bike, you can, you know, you can explore that pretty, not easily, but you know, it's still a 4 or 5 hour day, but like it's doable and it's really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a workout.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hands down.
Mm-hmm.
Hands down. I think it's a misconception of them.
Yeah.
Is that they make biking easier, but I think it just depends on how you use them. You just get to go farther.
Sorry. One of our friends rode one of our shovels the other day. And I was talking to her yesterday about it. And she said, I can't believe how high my heart rate was.
Yeah.
Like I didn't think it was going to be that much of a workout. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah. And they went and they did like a 25-mile ride from the where we're staying, and they were gone for 2.5 hours, and they came home, and they were just pumped, but they were like, we're so exhausted. Mm-hmm. That was hard. We're like, yeah, it's still hard.
I feel like it also helps you get out there.
Yeah.
The other day, I was feeling tired. It was like 4 or 5, like almost done with work, and I was just like, oh, like a little bit lethargic, and Kaylin's like, let's go for a ride. And I'm like, well, if we do e-bikes, but if not, like, I'm just like, I don't have the energy right now. And we just went for a super quick 1.5-2 hour ride, and it really like bumped my energy up and helped me, you know, getting out there. Cause otherwise I would have said, no, I'm too tired. I just want to stay home. So it truly helped me just
totally.
Do you guys think there's an advantage of e-bikes in providing accessibility and introducing newcomers to mountain biking?
I think for sure for providing accessibility. It's tough to answer the newcomer one because they're not cheap. I think one of the fears that people like to express about e-bikes is all of a sudden everyone's going to get an e-bike and be on the trails, and trails are going to be crowded. And I actually don't believe that narrative because I think there's too much of a cost barrier. But I think what it does is it allows people who are existing mountain bikers can mountain bike longer. You know, it's great for injuries. It's great for aging. It's great for accessibility of someone who might not be able to participate in the sport to the level that they want to. And so I think that that is an amazing aspect of them. I don't know. It's tough to, I don't know enough of the statistics in terms of like, are they really getting new unfamiliar mountain bikers onto biking? My guess is maybe not to the level that people are afraid of, just because of the cost of them.
I think that maybe e-bikes are creating that in between for people that maybe older people that aren't riding. You know, where you're seeing people on e-bikes when you come to various mountain towns, say you have these beautiful bike paths and you're starting to see a lot more people that are here visiting on an e-bike, which I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think, if the shop's running the bike, there's some, you know, it's positive for the, you know, I don't even know what I'm trying to say. Sorry. It's positive for the shops. It's positive for the community. It's positive for the town. And you're seeing all these people from, you know, the flatlands riding bikes in this area. Where, what would they normally be doing? They'd be staying in their VRBO or staying in their condo or staying in their hotel and not actually getting out. So I think that piece is probably we're gonna see that increase, but I agree with you. I don't think we're gonna see these big increases on the trails.
That's a good distinguisher.
Other than, you know, we were out the other day riding Reno Bear Flag Deadman, and there were a group of older gentlemen that come out, and they were all like ripping down on their e-bikes, which was rad. But you could tell that they were mountain bikers. But the average bear that are coming to these communities, if they're getting out on a bike for 2 hours and it happens to be an e-bike, good for them. Like, that's great. It's the older people. It's people that might have injuries or hip replacements or knee replacements or whatever. Like, it's great. They're getting out. It's increasing their ability to get out and go do those things. So I think there's two separate things happening, but I'm not really that concerned about people shredding on e-bikes that maybe shouldn't be shredding on e-bikes. Cause I agree. I think the cost barrier to get these bikes, and it is still hard. You have to understand and know how to ride like pretty well to go out on a trail.
I agree. So now that we're seeing, and not a big amount, but now that we're seeing regular bikes and e-bikes in the same environment, what would be like 3 rules or advice you would give to our listeners regarding trail etiquette? And you know, when you're riding an e-bike, you have kind of like certain rules that you have to follow, and you are in a, you know, do you have a motor? So, you know,
we were just talking about this, and I think we can distill it to the 3 that we talked about, which is, don't pass off trail. You're going to be passing more people because you're going faster than them. Like, don't like still maintain passing etiquette. Like, don't just veer off trail. Keep single track single. We talked about for both of us, we always yield to non-e-bike riders, even if we're climbing. I just think it's the right thing to do. Like, we have a motor. It's easy to restart on a climb. And I would say, like, don't pin it around blind uphill corners. The handful of times that we've had near misses with people on e-bikes, whether we're on regular bikes or also on e-bikes, it's like someone has just given her around a blind uphill corner. And that's like the one thing that you can't do on a regular bike. So that kind of changes the dynamics a little bit.
Yeah, we were just having this conversation yesterday. We're making a list.
Yeah.
E-bike 101.
Yeah, and I would also say, I mean, this is maybe stating the obvious, but like, just, you know, respect trail policies, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, the trails that are blatantly closed to e-bikes, like, respect that. And maybe that's going to change down the road, but don't jeopardize access by being that person.
Absolutely.
Yep. I feel like if we all want all trails to be open to e-bikes, we have to respect the ones that you're not allowed to and the ones you are so that we can keep growing and like keep opening those trails and say, hey, no, we're respectful of the rules and we're trying to maintain this etiquette. And maybe by people in charge of opening trails, like they see this behavior, they will be open to more trails and because e-bikes are not going away. They're here to stay and they are fun and they're awesome.
Yeah.
and they're not a replacement of the old bikes. I mean, the regular bikes. Like we love riding those bikes too.
Yeah.
It is a completely different experience and feel and So I just want to say a quick note here. For all our FAME audience, if you're interested in knowing more about this and riding with the e-bitches, like that's how you guys kind of like call yourselves, regarding e-bikes, come join us at Rome Fest Fruta. This starts on September 22nd, and tickets are available now. So come hang out with us. We're going to have a group ride and some other stuff happening at the festival. We're almost done here, and I just have one more question. From lessons learned in your lifetime, what advice would you give to entrepreneurs, outdoor enthusiasts, and those seeking to create change in their community?
Yeah, that is a great question. I guess, like, be engaged, you know, be participatory. You know, we're all pretty good at armchair bitching, but that doesn't really get anything done.
Yeah.
I guess, that kind of speaks to the change part. I think, you could kind of almost separate it into a few different answers, like entrepreneur spaces versus, people interested in change. But I guess, they kind of all go together, like, be engaged in the process.
Yeah, I think just being open to insert whatever word you want to insert, it's challenging to take a risk, right, on whatever piece you want to throw that at. But I think if it's something that you truly believe in and truly are passionate about and truly want to create some positive changes, just be open to yourself, be open to people in your community, be open to your surroundings, and get in the room and have conversations with people. Communication never hurts anyone. If we could all just communicate more about our fears, our hopes, our desires, our dreams, I think everybody would be in a much better place.
I think I should do some of that.
I think we all need to do
out
more.
There and sometimes you get afraid of putting yourself out there and like talk about all the goods and bads and communication does help solves a lot of that.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I just want to thank you both for such an amazing time. Thanks for sharing your story and with us and our listeners. Thanks for opening the hot tomato, and thank you for all the small and big things you have done for the women's cycling community. It's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks, Pa.
Anything else you guys want to add? How can we follow you on the social medias?
We're not great at it. You guys are going. You want to see a post every 2 weeks. Yeah. So that's great.
Come to Rome. Yeah. We'll be at both Rome, Fruta and Sedona. Please come say hi. If you have
come join an e-bike ride.
Yeah, come join an e-bike ride. If anyone out there have any questions about all these things we're talking about, like, hit us up. I mean,
we're always happy to talk business.
Always. always. And Paul, I want to just say a big thank you to you, because ever since I met you back then in 2019, you have been a favorite of mine. And I think you do a tremendous job with Pivot. And you're an inspiration as well. So thank you so much for being awesome.
Thanks so much. That really means a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. What a great time we had. I can't wait to do it in person next time and just, you know, chat and have fun and, you know, get to dance a little bit. Sweet. Awesome. Well, thank you guys.
Yeah. Thanks, Paz.
Thank you, Paz.
Have a great time.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.